Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome to episode number 249, interview episode number 249, and really excited to have on Ryan Kanan, the head girls basketball coach at Woodbine High School out in West Central Iowa. Coach Kanan has done a terrific job. We're going to dive into his story here in a little bit. I want to thank my guy Josh for suggesting, Coach Kanan to come on to the podcast. He finds these diamonds in the rough, and I'm really excited to have this conversation with Coach here tonight. Before we get to that, though, we need to talk about COSAC Chiropractic, our founding sponsor, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, go out and see Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi. You can check out their practice at cosacchiro.com or give them a call, 402-964-0300. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. Just put out some stuff today. Now, you're not going to hear this for about a week and a half. We got some stuff from Amy Williams, the head coach at the University of Nebraska. We got some stuff. You'll see some stuff. Just got some good things lined up here. Download, rate, review. When you get on iTunes, download it. Give us 5 stars. Say nice things. Leave a review here. The more folks do that, the more we move up in the rankings. I don't know how it works. I just know that it helps to get people on here. So when people look up coaching basketball podcasts or basketball podcasts, we slide up the food chain. And any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Enough of that baloney here. We've got Ryan Kanan, head girls basketball coach at Woodbine High School. Coach, how are you doing this evening?
I'm having a great day and having a great night. This will be fun, Marty.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. You know, Coach, you've got from what I know, you got a pretty really interesting story here. You've taken a program that for a long time has really really struggled, and you not just have them back to respectability, but you've played and you got your team down to the state tournament. You got down to the well a couple years ago. Another good season last year. But before we get to all that recent stuff, for the folks that don't know about your coaching journey, your basketball journey, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for having us on. It's a real blast. I mean, truthfully, you say things like diamond in the rough. I'm probably a little bit more just like, you know, a found golf ball in the rough, you know, like been looking for it for a while. I probably even got a cut in me, you know. I'm just a pretty simple guy. I was blessed. I'm getting to coach in my hometown right over here. I grew up in Woodbine. I'm currently sitting in the living room that I grew up in right here. So finally got mom and dad kicked out of the house and moved them into town so I could come live out here on the farm. And
usually that's the other way around, right? And usually they're kicking you out, you know?
Yeah, well, no, I did what I was told. I went and got married and had kids, and we were trying to live in a little tiny house in Harlan, or here in town of Woodbine, and we weren't fitting in the bedrooms. I said, Mom and Dad, you got this nice Camaro. You got this great motorcycle. You never get to drive it because you live out on gravel. Why don't you go in town and keep it in your own garage? You can drive them whenever you want. And that was kind of the seller. So now we filled up all the rooms over here with our 6 kids. So gotcha. We got a big family over here. I grew up in Woodbine. My sophomore year in high school, I love being in a small town. So, you know, population 1500, you got graduating classes between 30 and 40. So traditionally small schools, black and gold's the colors, we're the Tigers. And my sophomore year, my mom got the job over in Harlan as middle school principal. So we had to move to Harlan, which might make up on some people's maps. It's a 3A school, you know, with graduating classes at 150 or 200. So quite a big step up. And what I found out right there was, traditional excellence in almost every sport that you had. So if you ask me like why I ever became a coach, it was a vocation to me. I mean, that's how I actually see it, just because of the things that I was blessed with as I was going along. When I was over here in Woodbine, I got coached by Phil Hummel, who was a national coach of the year in track and field. When I moved over to Harlan, I had a state title winning coach at every single sport that I did. In every single sport that I did, they're all going to end up being Hall of Famers, whether it's Coach Blatt in football or Coach Osborne in basketball or Coach Karstens and Steve Dagas. So like the whole crew, that's kind of what got me going.
Yep.
Then I ended up getting to play football down at Coach Northwest Missouri State for a year with Coach Churchma. And after that, moved over to University of Iowa. Did not play football, but was able to marry my wife over there, who graduated with me over at Harlan. And in the end, while I was there, I started getting to coach in junior high football. And that kind of got me going. Got my first job over in Atlantic. I walked right into the deal and I said to, it's a small school in Iowa, about 40 minutes away from where Harlan was. So it was kind of back towards my hometown. I walked in there and they had a job opening for boys golf. And I said, well, I'm going to take that right there. So I applied and I interview in there and I'm in and I'm thinking I'm going to win this boys golf day. I really love golf. And Bob Sweeney turns my whole life around. He tells me, well, we think you're going to be decent here, but we're going to turn you into the assistant girls track and field coach. And I was like, I feel like you got this one wrong. I'm a boys golf coach. And he hooks me up with Bruce Henderson. And since then, I have never been the same person. Bruce Henderson is a Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union Hall of Fame girls track and field coach. He was two-time national coach of the year there. He won 5 titles in 6 years as a state title, won 16 straight conference titles. He's truthfully, if it's not Coach Blatt in Harlan football, it's got to be Coach Henderson. He's the two greatest coaches I've ever been around. Mm-hmm. He's just spectacular. And how he raises his program, how he treats his coaches, how he treats the community, how he treats the kids. The kids love him. They work for him. And he really just got me to evolve. And it was so much fun getting to work with him. I got to work with him for 4 years. And then in the 4th year, I got a random email from Rod Smith, who was the father of my best friend from Woodbine when I was growing up. He was the girls track and field coach over in Woodbine. He sends me an email and says, hey, we have a math position and a couple other coaching positions. You ever think about moving home? And it just kind of hit me sideways and didn't really think about it. After talking with Steph, my wife, and talking with Bruce Henderson over there in Atlantic, and then talking with my dad, we just kind of said, well, maybe it's time to move back home. And so we did move back home. And when I signed up for it, there was a boys track and field coach position. I'd take that one if I can. And a football position. You betcha I love coaching football. And they said, well, we'll do this for you, but you need to coach either girls basketball or boys basketball. And I said, well, I haven't coached basketball for very long. I've only done that for 2 years. And, you know, I feel a lot more comfortable with the other ones. They said, well, we got 2 spots. And I go, well, what's going on with them? Well, the boys are normally 500 and the girls aren't very good. And I go, do you got anyone interested in either one of them? Well, we got another young teacher that he thinks he might want to be the boys coach. And I said, well, do you think he'll be any good? Yeah, we think he'll be pretty good. Well, fast forward 14 years. That was Kyle Bartles. He took the boys to the state tournament last year. So
yeah.
Maybe you'll have him on next.
Yeah.
So I let Kyle have the boys and I took the girls. And I guess the rest is just kind of history right over there. You know, you talked about who helped us out. I remember them first couple of years, we just got spanked by our Weaver girls. They went to state 2 years in a row. And Davey Cook was the name of the coach. And he was just absolutely spectacular. And I went to go watch an all-star game afterwards for the girls. I had a gal in there and he came and sat down by me and he says, I like your attitude and I like your energy, but your guys' concepts are terrible. I go, well, I don't know how to stop you guys. You score 80 points on us every time we play. And he says, well, it's a little bit more about transition defense. And then you got to figure out ways to make layups. Like, okay. And then he ends up sending me via snail mail how to run the 1-2-2 matchup zone. Well, I still never figured out how to run it, but he had his little handwritten notes in there on what the cues and how to teach kids. And I kind of adapted that into what ended up being our 1-3-1 zone, which is an adaptation from Steve Kloss's 1-3-1 zone that you can get over on DVD that he put out. I think he's from Wisconsin. He's got some green team up there and they do a really nice way to do it. And I love running the 1-3-1 zone. So I learned a bunch from David Cook. All right. And he was kind of the mentor that helped me underneath his wing. And I learned a bunch from Steve Kloss and we got decent at the 1-3-1, but we didn't have a bunch of basketball players. We just had long, long, tall athletes. Okay. Well, the problem is at Woodbine, we got a 94-foot court. We're about the only 1A school in Western Iowa that's got one. But I tell you what, if you can run a 1-3-1 on a 94-footer, you can play defense. And there's been some years where we're just not quite good enough to do it.
Sure.
So you can't have your base be that 1-3-1 when you're sitting there trying to cover 47 feet. Because you go up against Elkhorn and Zyra enough, they're just going to ping-pong that ball across the top and your wings are going to get dead tired running up and back pistoning. And, you know, you can do it, girls, and there was no shot clock, so they're just going to sit there and piston for 2 minutes because his girls won't turn it coming over. He's sitting there chuckling. Their girls aren't moving. Mine have run a half a mile. There's one possession. They end up with a backdoor layup or some offensive rebound on the backside. I'm throwing a fit. He wins another one by 20. And I find out real quick, Tom knows what's best. So then the next one that I learned a bunch from was Tom Peterson, the guy that had just beat me about 80 times in a row. And what I learned from him was just disciplined execution. He's taken his team to state over and over and over. He's done it. One year he did it with eight. He had eight total girls on his team. Like, to wow. take a team to the state tournament doing that, it's just incredible. He's just a spectacular coach. He's helped me out throughout. I've learned, I get to ask him questions. He helps me out. Just standard setting. It's a lot like, the Alabama football coach, Nick Saban, yeah. you know, just setting a standard and getting girls to do things. Here I'm trying to get my girls to put their hands up on defense, and I'm watching his team practice. He makes them hold a brick in each hand.
Wow.
So you're going to go through and do it. He's old school. There ain't no new school about Tom.
Yeah.
He did a rub screen one time. That was as new school as he got. But I just mean, he's a fantastic dude. And then he also said, he got me looking into transition offense. And he just said, you know, hey, he always made me laugh, but he says, you know, watching girls basketball is just unpalatable. No one wants to watch it. Just run the ball down the court as quickly as you can. Get the first shot you can. Go back, play defense, do it over and over and over again. He goes, I'd rather watch our team punt the ball than pass it 18 times. Now, he's joking. His yeah. teams are very good, and they do not turn the ball over. And I find girls basketball, especially women's basketball, to be much more fun than watching guys dunk it all the time. It's pure basketball.
Sure.
And I love watching great women's basketball. And we had a game a couple of years back over there. It ended up being like 66-67. That was maybe the most fun basketball game I've ever coached in. Mm-hmm. Was losing a game to him at his place, down one. I think there was five straight possessions where each team scored either a three or a two, and we just kind of kept grinning at each other because we're both kind of known for defense, and both teams were scoring, and it was like you couldn't stop the girls that night. It was yeah. just a great game. So he kind of was a big push on me, and you know, for all those aspiring coaches, which I aspire to be better, Mike Neighbors, he was over at Villanova. He started doing his weekly news or monthly newsletter. There's great information out there. So if anybody ever goes look, Villanova newsletters are still out there. Then he moved up to University of Washington, got the Coach Kelsey Plume, and they made their big run. He invented his little green light shooting, which I encourage all coaches to get into. Now he's over at University of Arkansas, and he's with this transition offense. I mean, he shares everything on YouTube. You know, he's great to just talk to and send emails. He's spectacular. And then Larry Oliver was an assistant coach for me for a long time, just a great mentor. So that's kind of my upbringing and where mm-hmm. I go. And, you know, I'm not just a basketball coach. We're currently coaching football right over here right now. And I'm the offensive coordinator for the high school team and head boys track coach. And we're a co-ed track team. It's got 65 kids out there. So we're busy throughout the year. And that's, I guess, why you're having me on.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into some of those different philosophies. Obviously, you've kind of got, you know, three different sports in your repertoire here, Ryan. You know, you got track and field, which largely individualistic. Now, there's teamwork when it comes to relays and different things like that, but it's, you know, mostly an individual sport. You've got football, which is a tremendous team sport, but there's a you go hard for 5 to 7 seconds and then you reset and you got 20 to 30 seconds to reset, and then you go and you do things like that. And then, of course, basketball is obviously team-oriented, but it's consistent transition and stuff going like that. You know, I'm always fascinated with these coaches who are able to be successful in multiple sports. And you know, let's kind of focus on the basketball side of things, because that's what most of our coaches are going to be listening to this. But, you know, what have you taken from these other two sports of you know, track and field and football that has helped you develop a pretty solid program there at Woodbine with the girls basketball team?
I mean, in Southwest Iowa, especially with the small schools, you see, I don't know what the percentage is, got to be about half of them, that the women's basketball coaches at the high schools typically are some form of one of the football coaches. And I couldn't quite figure out why at the beginning. I'm starting to realize, like, most people, basketball coaches get sad, but most people say, you know, football tends to be, you know, the greatest team sport for men. All right. And basketball can have some arguments, but then you watch an NBA All-Star game and you're like, I don't know about that one. You know, a lot of one-on-one stuff. Can't play one-on-one in football. On the women's side of it, you got soccer and women's wrestling starting to come up. But truthfully, we don't have soccer at Woodbine. Like, that's not a sport. So in our sport at girls basketball, it is the only sport where you can purposely contact another female. Like, it is the only one.
Yep.
So it checks off a box that none of the other sports, you know, you have to have skill, you have to have touch, you have to have teamwork, you have to be able to dribble and shoot and rebound and run. The conditioning on a 94 footer is just so much more than an 80 footer, or we play on some that have restraining lines, you know, and it's just, our girls are like, we're already at the end. Like, yep, you're already at the end. There you go, ladies. You know, but I just mean all these. And then on top of it, you also have to have the physical wear and tear. Now, super blessed over at Woodbine. Our administration has done everything they can to get us everything that we need to do it. And we have a full-time strength and conditioning coach, which, you know, my goodness, is that nice. And ours is a female. You know, Miranda Ross is spectacular. She works with the kids all the time. She gets them all bought in. So we get kids that are pretty well-rounded athletes, which is nice. You know, what do I learn from the other sports? You know, I try to use the teamwork aspect that we use in football quite consistently over here with this. And then on the track and field with basketball, and then on the track and field side of it, we use record, rank, publish, right? RRP. And we use that over and over and over. So what makes track and field nice is that as you're going through, you know, you don't have to deal with as many parent complaints, because it's pretty easy to show a parent a stopwatch and say, really, this is why your kid's not running, or this is why this kid is. Basketball's harder.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. Basketball's harder because there's so much more messy things that go in. But I use record rank, we use record rank publish as much as we possibly can. So stole a little thing out of a book called The Competitive Cauldron. We use the competitive cauldron on a daily basis. It will change throughout the season what we're actually scoring and what things go in. But basically what happens is we're a black and gold team. So our girls wear a reversible white and gold uniform, and they wear a black compression shirt underneath. So at any given moment, we could have white versus gold, or we could have white versus gold versus black and do a three-teamer. So we get all that organized ahead of time. I've been blessed with incredible managers. Our last one, our Tally Rice, was one that just kind of helped shape our program. One we've got right now is Andrew, my son. He's going to be a sixth grader. He's been a lot of help, and I'm hoping to get Anna Leem, our fifth kid, to come up and help now. She can be a third grader and help keep kids organized when Andrew hits to junior high next year. So we've been blessed to have good managers that keep things scored, but we might run a, you know, we're going to have all of our list out for what we're going to do for practice. And then every drill that we do that's competitive, all right, there's winners and there's losers. All right. Mm-hmm. And so winners might get two, and then second place team might get one, and then everybody else gets zero. And then that just keeps getting scored throughout every drill that we do through the entire day. And what you're going to find is, I want champions. I want kids that want to compete. They don't have to be the best basketball player. You don't even have to be the reason why your team wins, but you got to make sure that your team never loses. Mm-hmm. And so then what happens is you start getting this competitive culture invested, you know, your kids are invested. And I've been blessed here the last, you know, 4 or 5 years with Nicole Shear as a 4 year starting at point guard, and Charlie Pryor's been a point guard her whole life. And so she could play off guard for those 2 years she was working with Nicole. But I mean, you've got two absolutely spectacular leaders that are good scorers and great ball handlers and highly competitive. That sets the tone right there. Now, without those two, we can't do what we've been able to do. But by having them in practice, wanting to beat each other all the time, and pretty much always putting them on different teams, that made practice, the level go way up. And so when we're able to do this, record, rank, and publish. So we record what happened during it. We rank the kids where they're at, and then we publish it. And we're not going to hide secrets here, children. This is where you're at. And we try to tell kids, if you're not in the top six of the scoring, you're probably not going to be one of the starters. Because if you've got a starter that's always hanging around at number 7 or number 8 or number 9 on your team in terms of competitiveness and practice, you got a big problem here. That means they're either A, shouldn't be starting because they're not good enough to be out there, or B, they are good enough to be out there and they're not trying hard during practice, right? Well, philosophically, I've got an issue with that right now. So we can address that very early on the season when we start losing out starting privileges right over here based on that. It also helps fill out how far can you go in your bench. You know, I prefer to run 10 or 11 girls early in the season and then knock that down to about 9 as you get into January. And as you're getting into February, it'll be 8. And in the really close games, it's probably only going to be 7.
Yep.
But I want those girls to have the ability to go in there and feel confident being able to play for themselves, but also have the girls on the team, you know, trust that they can get in there because they've done it before. I know we had a couple girls get sick early on last year, and we had a really tough game going on against Cam. And Madison Thomas was a senior, and she would even say she should have never started any game. But we had girls get sick, and this is a gal just needed to get in there and get started. And she makes some corner three-pointer at the end of the third quarter that lights the team up, and then she comes out of the fourth quarter and makes another one. And I don't know if she made 4 3-pointers all season, but she made 2 in that game right there. Yep. And the thing was, the street cred that that bought her with everybody else. I mean, she knew she was number 8 or number 9 or number 10 on the team, but we had girls that were not able to play that game. Yeah. And so what ends up happening is when we go to put her in at the end of the year, everyone believes in Madison because she was given that opportunity early. So I really believe that you got to give kids opportunities early so that way they can go prove whether they're ready or whether they're not ready. And kids will tend to prove exactly what they are. So that's kind of what we use our track and field stuff for, is just making sure that kids always know exactly where they're at and what they need to do. And you can build plans for those kiddos to kind of figure out what, you know, what they need to work on. And you as a coach can gear what it needs. And early on in the season, we spend a lot of time with conditioning. Okay, well, our conditioning drills are going to be worth more than, say, our shooting drills. Well, actually, I take that back. Shooting drills are pretty much always worth the most, because every coach can say what they want, but if you got a kid that can make 3-pointers, they're going to make their way out of the court. I've seen Robert Horry do it, so I know that this is a true statement. Carmelo Anthony's still playing, I think, in the NBA, and I don't know if he's ever played defense really ever. So I just know scoring does matter, right? But I mean, if you want kids to get in shape, we'll score it. Okay, so we score those pieces, and that kind of helps out. And then as the season goes on, we start going over to ping pong, and ping pong's the drill that every girl loves on our team, and that one gives you a whole bunch of game-based situations. And those are the ones that the kids end up getting scored more as we get into January and February. And truthfully, like, once we get into January, things are pretty well set. Kids know what they need to do, and at that point, we're just on a day-to-day basis trying to help kids develop and figure out ways to fit into that year's group. So I suppose, to answer your question, that's kind of where we get from track and field and football.
Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, 3 teams, 1 city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludtke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the 3 teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches that they went through, from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion, with these 3 teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now, think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person, or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court. Coach, you talked about the competitive cauldron, and it's kind of started originally with Anson Dorrance. I'm assuming that's where you got it from as well, right?
You know it.
Yeah. So, and it's something that I've toyed with. You know, how much, first of all, here's a question I do want to ask you with the stuff. How many Google Sheets do you have?
I don't think you want to know the answer to that question.
Maybe I do because I'm kind of twisted or whatever. But you talked about the competitive cauldron and Anson Dorrance kind of, for those that are not familiar with it, I know I read about it. It's a great book. I really think, I don't know what you think, Ryan, but there's a book about Anson Dorrance called The Man Watching, and you can get it for cheap on Amazon. I just looked it up a little bit ago. You can get it used on Amazon for, oh gosh, where'd it go? Now I lost it. $2.26. And I really feel like if you are a man who is coaching females, I think this is a great, great read for you. I highly, highly encourage you to do that. It's The Man Watching by Tim Cruthers. When you read about that, how did that kind of just hit you as a coach?
So where I got mine was from, there's a book out there you can look at. It's by Brian McCormick.
Okay.
And it's called The 21st Century Basketball Practice.
Okay.
So
yep.
That's where, like, to me, everything happens in practice, right? So like what you do there, you want to show up on a Tuesday or a Friday night. Uh-huh. And so like my favorite thing is for girls on the bench to see something happen during the game and be like, we just practiced that. And it's like, yes, mm-hmm. right? And my job as a coach is to put them into positions in practice. They're going to as close to replicate that as possible. Mm-hmm. So when we go through, like, I just knew that we were going to have a crew coming through that. I mean, we're in that right now where you were going to have a lot of athletes that came from, you know, the last time Woodmine was actually good at girls sports was back in the mid 90s, right over there at the end of the 90s and early 2000s. So those moms and the dads from the 90s that went to the state basketball tournament and went to the state football tournament, the state wrestling tournament, like those dads and those moms from right now, they got kids in our school right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we knew we were going to have a bunch of them coming through at the same time. Okay. So I have to figure out a way to get these girls to want to compete. All right. And then also to be able to give them clear understanding of what it is that they need to do to get better and exactly where they need to go. So that's why we went towards the competitive cauldron. And I was kind of nervous at the beginning because what happens if the best basketball on your player on your team doesn't win in drills? You know, like that's a nerve right there. Like what happens if, okay, what you find out real quick is your best basketball players are you almost always your best competitors. That's why they're your best basketball players and they're going to win. And what it really does, what I found, especially when we go three teams, when we go black, white, gold, what it really does is it forces at least three kids on your team to become leaders. Mm-hmm. Cause I mean, when it really comes down to it, I think a lot of coaches spend a lot of time with their top five versus their next five or whatever it ends up being. And when your top five is going together, you got one alpha dog out there running it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when we split it up evenly, we go black, white, gold, I'm getting the three alphas right there. And usually that third alpha is just maybe not quite ready, but I always like, we rank you throughout the season. So the number one girl, and then we split, they get one team, you know, yep. Number one always gets white. Number two always gets gold. Number three always gets black. And then we reverse snake it. Number four, you're on black also. So I'm going to give you the best Robin I've got over here, third Batman. I'm going to give you the best one I've got. And that black team, they end up getting a pretty nice little run because, you know, they get two starters on their team. And, you know, the gold team, they get two starters on their team. And the white team over there might have your top gal, but she's going to go have to get number six and number seven. Okay, well, then we start going through. It just makes for some really interesting dynamics in practice. And it cuts out on a lot of the cattiness, you know what I mean? Because they have to work with different girls every single day. And it is different when you're working with females. It just is. Like, you can just try to treat them like they're athletes, but I don't know. They tend to be a little bit more empathetic, mm-hmm. you know, and they do this thing that has forced me to become definitely a better coach, at least a different coach, hopefully better, right? Yeah. But they listen to how you say something. And when you work with football players, they do not listen how you say something. They listen to only what you say.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're so exactly right.
I have to use a better tone. I have to be careful with this, right? Like, and just understanding these things. And when I was younger, man, I just yelled at people all the time. I looked like a little Bobby Knight out there. I mean, I didn't throw chairs, but we didn't sit on chairs either, right? But I just mean, like, I was yelling all over the time and getting technicals and golly sakes, how many bridges did I burn with referees? So dumb. And now it's just like we finally have the ability to stand. I spend half the game seated.
Yep.
I don't even need to sit right over. I don't even need to stand. Let's just relax and enjoy this right over here, ladies, because you've done everything to give yourself the opportunity to go and compete in this little special game tonight. And I really want you to be able to go out there and compete. And I want you to enjoy that time. And if it's not one of the last games of the season, we know we're going to be learning from this one. And it's going to set up our next couple of practices, which is going to prep us for this next, you know, game that we're going to have, which is another little blessing over there. And truthfully, that's how we kind of look at it. And so I know one of your questions over there was like, how much game planning do you do? We game plan us 100% of the time. After about our first month of practicing games, we know almost exactly what we're going to look like at the end of the year and what we need to do to get there. And then after that, like, there's going to be 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 games throughout the year that we actually want to go and game plan. Like, hey, this is a team we're going to see in a regional final or a regional semi, or this is a regional final or semi caliber team. So we're going to actually have to game plan this for when we get to a regional semi or a regional final to get into a state tournament. So for those 4 or 5 or 6 games, we'll actually have one. But at the same time, we play man-to-man. We switch all screens. We play zone or motion offense. We don't have any plays that we run. Okay, what game planning can you do when you're switching every screen? I mean, it's just a tough one. So, like, the way that we play lends us to practice the way we do and game plan the way we do. Just because, are you going to have all 8 girls or 9 girls in your rotation going to memorize all 8, 9 characteristics from the other team? Because you don't know who you're going to be guarding.
Sure.
Yep. Like, I don't know, that it doesn't work, right? Like, we have to do, like, I learned that one from Coach Colpin, our softball coach over here. And I'm pretty sure he got it from Saban or somebody. We're coaches, so we're thieves. But, you know, the standard is the standard. We have to set the standard. That's the deal. And so for this game right over here, we might just say, hey, they have a 6-footer. Our starting post is 5'6". Okay. Anytime the post sniffs a basketball, she's getting doubled from the weak side, ladies.
Yeah.
That's it. End of story. That's how we have to do it. But like, when we made that state tournament run, I want to remind you, our starting center was 5'6".
Yeah.
That was the tallest girl on our team. Okay. So like, so the regional final or the regional pairings come out for us on February 1. The last game of the regular season is like February 9 for us.
Yep.
Okay, so it comes out on a Tuesday. A week later, we have to play Westwood Sloan in the last game of the season, okay, going into regionals. On that February 1, we get shown we're the 2 seed in the region with Westwood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So now we're going to be going playing again. They've got a 6-footer on their team. They actually have 2 6-footers. Okay, how are you going to deal with that when we're basically just a bunch of midgets running around? All right, so
got to figure it out somehow. Yeah,
got to figure it out. So we just went into the game. And Coach Johnson's a spectacular coach, and his daughter had blown her ACL. And if she was in that game, it'd have been a totally different ball game. But the first time we played her, we didn't double her once. Their big post in the middle, she goes for 32 points. We get beat by 8. I said, hey, girls. I talked to Tom Peterson, that Elkhorn Xyra coach, before. I go, Coach, what do I do here? I'm going to have to play these girls twice. And he goes, don't show them anything. Mm-hmm. And run a whole bunch of plays so he has to game plan.
Yeah.
I go, Coach, we don't run plays. And he goes, never mind. Just don't do what you want to do. He goes, I'm assuming you're going to want to double. Yeah. So he goes, you want to double from the front side or the back? I want to double from the back side. He goes, well, good. Do not ever double from the back side and have your girls accidentally double from the front side a couple times in that first game. Well, I tell our girl that every once in a while, double from the front side, and we couldn't remember to do that. So we just let her score 32 points, and we lose by 8. And the second time, our girls executed that game plan of doubling from the backside. I think we held her to maybe 8 or 9 total points, and we just had a great night. And yeah. Charlie made a bucket full of free throws coming down the line, a special night, and then they hit into the state tournament.
Yeah, yeah. When you we were talking before we started recording here, I said you had quite the rebuild, and you know it wasn't it was just a build. There was nothing to it. But you had to start somewhere, Ryan. You know, as you looked at it, where did you start? What's the one or two things that you started with there?
Well, the superintendent said we had 2 jobs that year. We had to get the grades up, and we had to make sure girls got to class on time. That was my job. I was like, well, that is something that I can do.
Yeah.
All right. So we do that. And I talked to the girls track coach, and he goes, it'd be really nice if they could get in shape so we could run 4x8 this year. We think you have a good 4x8 team. I go, oh, okay. All right. We'll get them in shape. So we go to get them in shape, and the 3 best basketball players, the 3 leading scorers, they were all going to be juniors. When they were sophomores the year before I got here, They were the three leading scorers. They quit within the first week. So now I got no scoring coming back from a team that averaged 31 points a game. Yeah. All right. So there's nothing here. I did have an 800 runner, Shelby Hall, who was just a nail biter. She'd just get out there and she could run. And she was mean and she was a great little point guard. All right. And couldn't shoot really well, but she was mean. And then we just decided right then and there, we don't have a lot of basketball players. We're going to be mentally tough and physically capable. That's our big thing. We're going to run, we're going to rebound, and we're going to go back and we're going to play defense. So that's what we did a bunch of, and the girls kind of hung their hats on it. And truthfully, we won, like, they won 17 games the 10 years before I got here total. Yeah. Now first year we win four games. The four games that we won, two of them against West Harrison. West Harrison only had one win total in the season. That was against us. We went 2-1 against them. And then we beat Logan twice. They were 0-4 for the season. So our four wins were against the teams that were combined like 1-40-something. Yeah. So it was nothing to write home about. However, the newspapers thought that was spectacular to win four games in a year. Yeah. The next year we come back, basically have everybody back. We win five, so not a lot better. And then at that point, I had this good athlete, this junior. She just kept fouling out. We were 5-17. She fouled out 18 or 19 in the 22 games. Okay. Well, that's not good, right? She's your best rebounder. She's your best defensive player. Great athlete. Got to keep her on the floor. So we got to figure out a way to get Shelby Barrett. So I'm Googling, because that's all I know how to do is to Google and make spreadsheets. And I'm looking up there. And I got on there. How do I keep my best basketball player on the court and not get into foul trouble? All right. So I Google that one up. And guess what shows up? 1-3-1 zone. And I was like, I don't see how that could happen. I always guess a 2-3 zone, but that's like a swear word at Woodbine. We don't talk about the 2-3 zone. All right, we just refuse to run it over here. So, okay, so 1-3-1. So where are you going to put him? So I look onto his little deal, and he says, you put him as far away from the hoop as possible. Well, this is going to be my school's leading rebounder, like in career rebounding. I'm going to go put her 25 feet from the hoop. So we do it. She only fouls out of 1 or 2 the whole season. Well, it makes sense. She's got a free run at the board anytime it's coming. Nobody can box her out. And she doesn't have any of the stupid rebounding ones where she's right next to someone that's slightly out of position and jumps over the back. Having her on the court the entire time was a difference maker. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, I had a rotation of 12 girls, so we could just rotate runners through on that bottom part of that 1-3-1. And our wings, we could just keep rotating them through and having Dacia Newsom out of there, just a big old bad gal in the middle, right up my first real mama jama in the middle. Okay, well, that made a difference for us. And so then what ended up happening is girls started believing in themselves. They didn't really have a reason to. They just outworked and out-hustled everybody. And then what happened is they get to 12 wins that year. And the next year we were better, but we only got to 8. We just ran into a buzzsaw on schedule. And we, you know, I think we played like 6 or 7 different teams that, you know, made regional finals and went to the state tournament. Yep. And so what ends up happening, we went through a couple of more down spells where we had some injuries. But then we started to see this crew coming through that came up through. And, you know, what do you do with them? Well, I wanted to still run 1-3-1. Well, you can't run 1-3-1 with a bunch of gals that are 5'5", 5'3", 5'1", and 5'6". That one's just not going to work. But they are super smart. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to play man-to-man. Oh, who are you going to guard on who? I don't know. We couldn't figure it out. So he said, never mind, forget it. Switch every screen. Well, teams struggle with that. And over here in Western Iowa, there are not a lot of teams that play man-to-man. So the old days of like having a man-to-man offense, I don't even know if a lot of teams have it anymore. They might have a couple sets, but they don't have like multiple offenses. So we were kind of the weird team playing man-to-man. And so we just said, we're just going to do it all the time. And we tried being a run and jump team, which to the life of me, like I'm trying to, I don't know if you've ever had Coach Jungers on from up there in Newell Fonda, but I mean, that's the one you want to get on, right?
Well,
he knows
Dick
how to run that run and jump.
Yeah. Dick and I grew up together. I've known Dick for 40 years. So.
Okay. All right. So he's been my model to try to do. I just can't get girls bought into this trapping from the backside. Mm. And the deal is if they don't trust each other, that run and jump's nothing.
Yeah.
And so what ended up happening, I kept fighting them. That year we went to state, the hardest decision I ever had to make coaching girls basketball. I knew for us to become a top 3 or 4 team, which I really thought we were going to be, mm-hmm. I knew we couldn't beat Audie Crooks, right? Yeah. Like, how are you going to stop her? But I knew we could get into that run just with the talent that we had. The problem was we needed to be a run and jump team. And the girls were like, yeah, we want to do it. But they just, you could tell as they're doing it, they were hesitant. They were just always, and I couldn't figure out a way to get them to just fully buy into it. And so it was about, I don't know, it must be Christmas break. And I realized, like, I'm wasting all of this practice time trying to get run and jump in when they're showing me right now they want to be a half court team, which just hurt my heart because I want to go fast, fast, fast. But there's no going around it. I have five really smart basketball players out there.
Yeah.
And my 6, 7, 8, and 9 are good athletes and will do what they're told. And I got great leaders up there in the front end. Okay, well, you got to do what they want to do on here. Otherwise, I'm just going to fight them and we're going to waste all these practices. So we switched right then. And I knew that kind of lowered our ceiling on how high we could actually go in the state deal. Mm-hmm. Because we just weren't going to have the height necessary to go, you know, if we see a 6'2" girl, we're pretty much done, yeah. You know, unless you can trap and press them. And we weren't going to be doing that. All right. So it kind of lowered our ceiling just a little bit, but it also raised our floor a ton because we got to work on the stuff that we absolutely needed. The girls had a blast doing it. And that really just changed how it was. So I think more than anything I learned right there, like, you need to set your standard. You need to be who you want to be as a coach, but you also can't fight your own team.
Yep.
And when your team's saying, like, let's say I'm in track and field, I'm a 4x4 coach. That's what I am. I'm going to teach 4x4 and I'm going to teach 4x8. And that's what we're going to do. And you have a bucket full of sprinters come through that want to run 4x1 or 4x2. You can fight them all you want, but when they quit and you don't have a 4x1 and a 4x2, and now you don't have a 4x4 or 4x8, what are you going to do now?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yep.
Just at some point, you got to listen to your kids. And that's what I found out over here is if you listen to your kids, you know, and I think then the respect goes both ways right over there. And I tried telling you earlier, like before we got on the air, is the ownership from the student athletes, that's the major. Like, it's not my job as a head coach to come up with the goals. Mm-hmm. It's my job to have the vision. It's my job to work with the captains to set the standard and come up with these goals for what we're doing. But if your goals are something like, we want to make it to the state tournament, well, good. So does 28 others. Well, probably 60 teams want to get into it.
Yeah.
All right. And 28 have the talent to do it. Like, if that's your only goal, well, you know, 60 of you are going to end up failing your goal. Do you want to go through? So, like, we're going to set our goals just a little bit different. All right, we're going to set our goals over here where we want to be a great teammate every single day. Okay, well, yep. What does that look like?
Yep.
And it turns out, like, if you do that, you're going to be able to get to the stuff that you need to be later. So my big learn from that piece was just getting to listen to your kids and take pride in your girls. And I mean, I had just and Nicole Hafer was great for me. And so was Addison Erickson. And so was Amanda Newton and DJ and Kate. They played a big run in that too, but there's no going around it. Getting that last hug over there from Nicole Shear when we're walking off the court and she's carrying the trophy coming off. You know, she owned that team and she was handing it off to Charlie, who I get to work, lucky to get to work one more year with her over here. But when you got great kids, you just got to listen to them. And then hopefully, you know, you can buy the respect from them to where in the tough spot, they're going to listen to you too. And we kind of got to that point.
Coach, you took your team to the state tournament for the first time in almost 40 years. No, sorry, math, 50 years, jeepers. This is why I teach history and not math. So, you know, I had to be a heck of an experience. As these things often end up happening, you're going there for the first time in almost 50 years, and you get matched up with Dick and his team who, you know, they just, you know, rinse and repeat. But what'd you learn from that experience?
I mean, I just soaked it all up. I was lucky. I got to go talk to Tom, you know, when we knew we qualified and even before we qualified, I talked to Tom Peterson, like, what's it look like the next week? All right. Like, what do you do if you're actually going to try to make a run? And we thought we could make a run, which is, God sakes, running through Newell, you know, I mean, most teams when they get to the state tournament and they lose, they typically, like at the Iowa State tournament, they'll, you know, the first rounds are usually like 60s to 30s.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we got mid 60s. We just, like, there was no team at any point of that tournament other than in the state title game that lost a game that scored as many as we did. Yeah. We tried scoring. Hell, we scored the state record, you know, most three-pointers made in the game, mm-hmm. like, as a team. Like, we tried. We just, they didn't miss in that second quarter. That caused us an issue. But I got to talk to Glenwood, who had been there many, many times. So kind of got that map going in. So any coach that's ever getting there for that first time, talk to the coaches that have been there. Ask them the questions, you know, and I got to talk to Coach Younger's over there, Newell afterwards and beforehand, you know, and you just see like, oh, it's just the first round. We're going to be here all week. And I was like, I really hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, it was also hard to be there and not just soak it all up. You know, the girls union at Iowa does such an incredible job.
Yep.
Making it an awesome experience for the girls and the team and the coaches.
Yep.
Everything they do is so cool. So my hat goes off to the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union. I don't know how you come up with your regional pairings. They got a team from in volleyball this year that are going to have to meet in a neutral site. They're 4 hours and 48 minutes apart, which is probably nothing out there in Nebraska because you guys have a long state. That's from one corner to the other corner over here. They're going to meet in the middle of Des Moines, I'm guessing. I don't know. Like, I don't know how they come up with all that. But what they do there at the state tournament is so special for those girls. And it's just an awesome, awesome experience. It was really cool to have my daughter on the team. She was a freshman over there on there, and they go and they put everybody's names on they make like a boardwalk with everybody's names on it and on the wall, and just everything about it was cool. And what was neat was getting to see, you know, we've been to a couple places to scrimmage, other places to where, you know, and our girls have played some AAU ball, so they're used to not having, you know, a wall directly behind the hoop, because that's kind of what you're worried about. And you're worried about, will they be able to have their shooters touch? Well, our girls worked right through that. You saw our boys team do the same thing. You know, I think Landon Bloom scored, I think he made 7 3-pointers the state tournament here as a freshman this last year. You know, your cream of the crop's going to rise. And I was proud of our girls' ability to do that. We just ran into that buzzsaw with those turnovers in the second quarter, and then they just didn't miss. I think they had 22 points in that second quarter. And we just, I think we were relatively even in the first, third, and fourth. We just, that second quarter got us, and we just couldn't quite get through it. And then the stuff they don't tell you, you know, like, hey, you're going to have to make a commercial that sells your school and your town. All right. That'll be fun. Right. And like, hey, you have to order an extra t-shirt. And like, 'cause they're going to go put it on the wall over here. And all right, well, if I make it back there again, or when we make it back there again, like, hey, that's, I kind of know what we're supposed to do now, but it all just hits so quick,
yeah.
You know, and to be very honest, track and field was starting. Like, I missed the first 10 days of track and field, but I'm also the head coach of that. So I'm trying to organize those practices and not being there, you know, but having to go to basketball first and still trying to get contact with those boys track and field and girls track and field over there. And it just was a cool experience. And for Woodbine to be able to go do that, you know, for any small school. And so, because the whole community goes, they let out school, you know, and
sure.
They get there.
Oh, yeah.
The town closes down, and 49 years in between. And, you know, two nights beforehand, we brought all the gals back that had been on that 74 team, or the 73 and the 71, like the teams that had been there back in the 6-on-6 era. And to sit there and see these gals, I didn't know they were the ones on the team.
What?
Because I know them as, you know, 70-year-olds.
Yeah.
I didn't know them as 17-year-olds. And here, my next door neighbor, you know, her daughter-in-law, I'd sat there and had tea with her how many times? She was on the team. I was like, holy cow, Cheryl Book, she was on this team. And all these ladies that we'd seen at church, you know, this whole time, goodness sakes, you were one of the defensive players back here, you know. And then you can go back, and if you look on YouTube on there, you can see some of these old 6-on-6 finals and 6-on-6 semifinals to go watch them. And just to go see that thing, you know, it's just pretty cool over there to get to be a part of that and, you know, get those girls. And the parents were awesome, and they went and got a, you know, one of those nice buses for us to ride on, and I hop on. And normally I have to drive the bus everywhere we go, and to not have to drive was nice. And I immediately take a picture of everything I'm in there, and I send it right to the superintendent. Like, hey guys, we need to up our game. If we're going to say that, you know, we're doing everything above and beyond, we need one of these for activities. And we didn't get one, so apparently that message did not get received. But I'll keep asking for one of those nice buses over there like that.
Coach, let's do a little transition here. Let's talk a little John Wooden here. I got a John Wooden quote from you, or for you, from Wooden's book, A Lifetime of Observations. Where did I put the sheet now? No, there it is. Sorry. Coach, I'm going to read you this quote here, give you a second to think about it a little bit, and then let's chew it up a little bit. How's that sound?
Sounds fun.
All right. So, Coach Kanan, the John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, comes from page 37. The quote of the day is, youngsters today often blame others for their own conduct. I tell youngsters at basketball clinics, if you're blaming these things on others, doing it simply because they are, that shows weakness on your part. You're making excuses. Giving yourself an alibi, trying to condone what you're doing. You're blaming somebody else, and that's weakness. Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard. And we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success. And it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. And every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there, you know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So, subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. What do you think, Ryan?
I guess the way I'd go around that, so it's hard for me to separate teaching and coaching, right? So I'm a math teacher, right? And we coach all the sports throughout the year, you know, and as we're going through, I see this as a teaching moment for this one. I just sat down with our leading offensive lineman 3 days ago with this exact same quote that you just went over there, because we lost to number four Remsen up there at their place on Friday night. Both teams were undefeated, number four versus number five in the state. And when we come back, I keep getting told, well, that's the difference between 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds. And it just bothers me, yeah. Because last year when we get beat against somebody, it was like, well, that's what happens when you got seniors and juniors playing against juniors and sophomores. How much longer are we going to use this excuse, guys? How much longer are we going to make an excuse ourselves, or even worse, allow someone to make an excuse for us?
Yeah.
And so the chat that I had with Jax Pryor was, hey, if you ever want to be a champion, champions don't blame. They don't make excuses. They see the issue. They figure out a way to come up with a solution. If they can't, they go to somebody else who can help them. And most importantly, they own the issue. You have to own it. Because if you pretend like it's not there, all right, you're just putting it off. And then I always kind of say, you like, if you're just putting stuff off, it's like paying with a credit card. Sure, pay it right now. But we want to pay cash straight up right now.
Yeah.
So no more excuses, no more blaming other people. Pay cash, get it done. All right, it'll stink a little bit right now, but it'll stink a lot less than having to deal with it later when it gets all tied up into a knot and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So I guess just more than anything is the idea of champions own, right? Champions own. I might not want to go pay the bills. Well, I got an option of paying the bill right now or waiting for a finance charge next month. Well, just pay it now. Get it done, right? Do the stuff you don't want to do. Get it done ahead of time. So I guess more than anything, I look at it as a teaching moment. I do think that the way things go nowadays, you know, I'm a parent also. And so we got a lot of parents out there that are probably listening, or, you know, the coaches that have to deal with parents all the time. But just that we have a lot of enabling parents. And I'm not saying that ours do, but I know that it occurs in society. And when this enabling, that is just making an excuse. Mm-hmm. Is blaming something else instead of owning right now. And we want to raise our kids, right? Whether they're our own children or the basketball guys we get or the football or the track and field kids that we have, however, that we want to raise our kids to be able to own their mistakes. All right. And also, I try to tell kids all the time, hey, just as a reminder, unless something really crazy happens, I will never remember you for a single mistake. Yeah. I will not. And I will never remember you for a single good thing that you do either. It's the stacking, right? And the daily being together, that's what we're going to remember. Yeah. We're going to remember all these little things, right? Like, yep. We're going to remember the stupid little inside jokes. And so if we can get ahead of things and own things and use this as a teaching opportunity for kids, I feel like that's when you're going to see the most growth from kids. And they're going to be able to hopefully use that into another situation and then maybe make the world a little bit better place.
Yeah, you know, you expect, I mean, you and I have done this long enough, Ryan, you know your kids are going to make mistakes. You know there's going to be some mess ups along the way. It's yeah. Just the multiple mistakes. And then you just reach a point where if a kid continues to make those same mistakes over and over again, unfortunately, you have to have a really, really tough conversation where it's just you just go, sorry, I just can't trust you anymore, you know, or, you know, and sometimes that's decisions off the court. Sometimes that's decision on the court. But at some point you can only, for the good of the team, you can only put so much faith into a player or a student athlete if they continue to make poor decisions, again, whether it's on the floor or off the floor, and you've got to own it, and you've got to not only own it, but then you've got to show how you're going to change, how you're going to do things differently. And I think that's a hard process for kids to go through. And most of the kids are willing to go through that, but you get those one or two along the way that they say the right thing, they give you all that stuff, but God, gee, you know, you just, as Coach Wooden would say, goodness gracious sakes alive, how many times, I just can't have this conversation with you anymore. We just can't do it anymore. And I know I've been there, unfortunately, one or two times in my career, and it's tough, it's hard, but you're also there to protect the team first. And as much as you would like to help the individual, until the individual starts helping themselves, you can't help them. You just can't. That's my belief. I don't know where you're at with that.
Yeah, I think if it's detrimental to your team, that's a completely different ballpark, right? Mm-hmm. A completely different ballpark. And so what we just, where is the standard, right? Where is the, you say the standard is there. So this is something we do here. This is something, you know, we don't do this here, right? Mm-hmm. Like this doesn't occur on our team. Like, you know, like, and if you have to have a consequence, all right, fine, have a consequence. All right. We don't have a whole bunch of team rules on ours.
Yep.
All right. I don't feel like you need to. If the standard's there and kids want, and the kids believe that they can go and show success, that's what's going to end up that's going to be your driving force. And so they have to have a very clear picture. So if these things are occurring, right, and it's outside of what you need to happen to get to the vision that you're going to, then obviously this person is not bought into what you're really trying to do. Because if they wanted to get to where you wanted to go, all right, then they would hop on the bus and actually do what you're actually asking them to do. It sounds to me like they want to be hitchhiking anyway. So at that point, right over there, you're going to have a couple conversations with them. And if it's not happening, then all right, see ya. Our bus is going to keep moving because we got to keep going forward over here.
Yeah.
You can't keep trying to go and grab kids off to the side and pick them up late and all that kind of other nonsense. So
yeah,
it would put it in a tough spot. Again, like I'd say, try to get to it before it ever becomes this big of an issue.
Yeah.
Right. And usually that's a calling out cord from something else. Now, maybe something's going on at home. We don't know. All right. A lot of times it's just a playing time or some other issue. I feel like we're considerably better when kids know exactly where they stand, exactly what the team needs, exactly where the team wants to go, and then where they fit into that picture. And so when you can give them very clear discussions, very clear where everything is, I think Brené Brown has a little thing in her book that says clear is kind, unclear is unkind, right? So like just being absolutely clear. Don't say I remember Coach Osborne always said, if you shoot 200 shots all summer, you get more playing time. And so I shoot 200 shots every day all summer. And I got more playing time. I went from averaging 7 seconds a game to 9 seconds a game. Okay. He did not lie to me. But that was not cool, Coach Osborne. Now, it's not Coach Osborne's fault. They were really good, and I was not.
Yeah.
So I do not blame him for it. And what should he do? He should tell me to shoot, because maybe if I would have gotten a lot better, I could have. But when you're 5'9 or 5'10 and you're not that great of a shooter, you're probably not going to be playing basketball for very long. So that was the deal. But so I just mean, try to have that clear picture. And again, creating those relationships with kids early. I guess what I found is, I tend to not have a lot of all the outside shenanigans, just because what happens is kids that want to compete really love being around me, and kids that don't love to compete, they don't want to be around me. So we just tend to not get those kinds of kids in our program very often.
Yeah.
Plain and simple, they just know that we're relatively no nonsense. And I guess that just kind of comes off during math class. And then what ends up happening is, you know, the kids that want to be there, we just usually have a pretty good time and want to actually get stuff done. So yeah. I haven't had a ton of experience with it, mainly just because those kids usually don't come through the door.
Yep. Let's talk about your kind of some unique things, Coach. You had mentioned a little bit earlier, one out of bounds play, no sidelines play, you know, all motion, no sets. How do you get your kids on the same page?
Oh, I tried putting in baseline out of bounds plays. We can't do it. I could run a drill in practice where I just said, okay, you, number one, you go to this spot. Two, you go here, three, four, five, just here, you five. I'm going to say go. I'm going to give you 4 seconds to run to the spot. Just go to the spot. We would fail. We cannot go to this. It's like we lack the ability to know where this picture on my whiteboard, which has a court on it. Like, we can't do that. Most of the girls can. Some of them can't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I'm tired of fighting it. That's fine. Back at my root, let's rebound, let's run, let's go play defense. Okay, so if that's the case, develop your girls' decision-making. And so what we find out over here is we play so many small-sided games in practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are playing twos on twos, ones on ones, threes on threes, and our girls' favorites, ping pong, four on four on four. All right, make it, take it. You got to go down to the other side. Like, our girls, if we call out we're playing ping pong, they're like, oh, please, how many? I'll say 10 minutes. 15, coach, give us 15. They will play ping pong to the end of the day. That is all they want to do, is play ping pong. But when you do that, and what I get to do then, right, as the kind of the puppeteer over there of that place, is I got to tell the defense what defense they're playing. So we're going to keep giving them different options as they're going against it. And then that forces your defense into communication, forces your offense to, you know, recognize, be aware of what's actually going on, try to figure out where the advantage is and go play. And then again, let's not go away from the fact I have an incredible shooter named Charlie Pryor. I just graduated another 900 point score, and I just had Nicole Shear go through here, and she had 800 points and 500 rebounds and 500 assists and almost 400 steals. Like, I've had some really good ones coming through that were really, really smart at basketball. And Addison Erickson, I think, ended up right around 900 points. Like, they all through at the same time. Okay, so when you have that kind of kids coming through that are not tall, okay, we've got to be multiple. And the thing is, too, I'm coaching against Tom Peterson. How many plays can I have that he will not teach his 6 girls how to stop? They're going to learn how to stop them. All right, well, I'm wasting my time trying to out-coach him on set plays. He's the set play master. So instead, we're just going to go through and run actions. That's all we're going to do. Anytime I can go and get into a pick-and-roll action, we want it, especially side pick-and-roll. Anytime that we can go get a pass and cut and screen away, hey, that's a good one on our end. We really like, dribble drive. That's okay. That's a good movement. As long as your 4 girls on the outside can shoot, we spend an incredible amount of time in practice shooting, making reads, and playing transition defense. I mean, those are our 3 things that we're going to do in practice every single day. We're going to do 2 or 3 shooting drills. They're going to be in the competitive cauldron. They're going to go up out of the green light shooting stuff. We're going to go through, and we're going to have at least 2 transition defense drills. Like if we're doing a rebounding drill, it will also be transition defense, because there's no need to learn how to rebound. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're going to go play transition offense, that's what you want to do. I want to rebound so I can get the ball.
Yep.
Or if I'm going to go try to become an offensive rebounder, I'm going to go get real aggressive. Well, it doesn't do any good teaching girls how to be really aggressive on offense if you're not going to have great get back girls. Because if you're sending 3 girls to the board or 4 girls to the board when you're shooting and you only got 1 back, she better be great. Because if she's not great, you're giving up layups. And in 1A basketball round over here, the number one indicator of wins is effective field goal percentage.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what's the best way to get good at shooting baskets? Well, make as many layups as you can. All right, I've got to give you none. our goal every single game we're going into this thing is we want to give up. We tier things at the teams that we're playing against, like great teams are tier one and middle is tier two and bottom is tier three. Against a tier three team, if we give up a single transition point, I will absolutely lose. We will be running a lot at the next practice. We will be doing transition defense. That is it. Mm-hmm. All right. Because you will not give up a point to a team that's in the bottom tier. The middle teams, we try to give up 2 points or less. The good teams, we try to give up 4 points or less. But to go take a state ranked team and hold them to only playing half court offense, it takes a lot of effort, a lot of communication, and a lot of hustle and buy in from your girls. But they also then you're able to build the half court defense, which gets them into their ping pong situation. So that's kind of where we're aiming. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure teams are shooting contested shots. I know they say you want to shoot them, make them shoot contested jumpers. Yes, preferably two-pointers. Yes, but I got multi-sport girls that don't know everything yet. So sure. Truthfully, like, we just want to not give up layups. That's our deal. And then we want to rebound. So that's how we play basketball. Mm-hmm.
Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs, and now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com.
Coach, how do you, you talked a little bit about your small-sided games and the things that you do there. I want to talk about two more things with you. I want to talk about your practice setup, and I want to talk about your defensive transition philosophy, which you were kind of talking about there a little bit. But let's start with your practice setup, and if you want to roll into your defensive transition philosophy and how you implement that as well, just go ahead and let it rip. The floor is yours. But, what do you do in practice? How do you set your things up? What are you guys doing there in Woodbine to implement this real pure form sense of basketball where the kids are really just going out there and making basketball plays at both ends of the floor? So you talked a little bit about that, the small sided games and a couple other things, but kind of go into depth. What's an average practice look like for you?
I can show you through my sheets. I don't know if that's something you guys ever post out on your stuff, but I can show you kind of what we look through. But we will always start with some type of shooting drill, almost always a shorty. The one we like is Georgia Tech team shooting, where we can go and get three teams on separate hoops over here going. And on that one over there, they got to make seven shots from the corner threes. And then from there, they got to go make seven, and they're not in a row, just seven total. Then they got to go make seven from the elbow on a one dribble pull up. And from there, no, I'm sorry. After the threes, they have to go make seven consecutive layups. That's the one that gets them. Yeah. Because there's a big pressure on that, right? Because yep. What happens if you're the girl that, it's six, I can't miss, all right? But seven consecutive layups, that gets them usually. And then we're doing one dribble pull-ups at the elbow, seven of those just total. Then we head over to the opposite corner, three, seven. Then seven in a row layups on the left hand. That can always be entertaining. And then seven jumper or one dribble pull-ups from the elbow. And then we hit it up seven from the top of the key three-pointers. And then you got to get that done in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a lot of shooting. But again, if we're going three hoops, That's probably going to be, you know, all 16 or 18 or 19 of us that are playing. Every girl's got to be a part of that. So really, it's just an incredible amount of shots. It's a whole bunch of rebounds. It's a whole bunch of passing to each other and a communication. And they're doing it in a competitive situation. Then from there, our winners from that would get 2 points. The team that gets second gets one, and the losing team gets zero, and we're into the cauldron. Usually Coach Putnam does some type of a ball handling circuit right over there for about 4 or 5 minutes. We get into rebounding war. We love rebounding war. We'll get whites on one side, gold on the other side. We're going to have 3 girls come out from both of them. 2 girls at the top of the key, 2 girls down on the block on both sides, and 2 girls kind of like at the volleyball corner line. And the girls in the block got to go box out the girls on the volleyball corner line. And then the 2 girls that are up there on the top, one of them is going to get the ball from the coach up at the top. They're going to shoot. The other girl is just a free runner over here to get a rebound. And then from there, we just play. Every rebound is a point. And every pet, then we got to get a great outlet pass back to the coach who's hanging out somewhere towards the half court line or top of the key. And then, you know, if gold gets the rebound and they get a great outlet pass, now gold's playing 3-on-3 or playing half court. Make the shot right over there. Okay, you get 2 points. Now we're going to cycle 3 new teams in. We're starting to back up. If you miss the shot, whoever gets the rebound, that's a point. And whether you're on offense or defense, you're going to outlet it back there, back out to coach. And we call it rebounding war. Now, that can be a great conditioning drill, because if they can't make a basket, which happens sometimes, yeah. All right, where it ends up playing for a minute and a half, that gets a little bit like, but deflections will give it a point, right? Steal hustle stuff will give those a point. Great screens, all right, or a give and go. Like we, yeah. You know, again, when you're the puppeteer, you can give out the points as you go on. So we like that rebounding war. Then after that, we usually go some type of form of like stop, score, stop. We love stop, score, stop over there to really get through. We just give rules as to what you're going on. So I'm sure your coaches will talk about that one. Transition build-up's one that we do quite often. We're going to start out we used to do 1-on-0, then come back 2-on-1, and then 3-on-2, 4-on-3. What I found out over it, we're just giving up a free layup. And then I'm looking at games. I never get that free layup. So instead, we start the team out. All right, gold might be heading over to the north side. Okay, well, they're heading over to white side. One white girl's got to start over there on gold side. All right, she got chased from the baseline, but the gold girl's going to start it up there at the free throw line. So she's got to go, you know, 80 or, you know, 80 feet. All right, and the white girl's going to go chase her from 94 feet. She can do everything she can to get that girl to not make that layup. And then we're playing 2-on-1 coming back, and then it's building up into 3-on-2. So just constant communication. All right, constant up and down, constant. You got to match up, and the defense is always down one kid. So you cannot be lazy. Yep. Your girl passes it, you got to get back into the paint, figure out a way to make this thing work because you're short a girl. Mm-hmm. Then we do shooting, a lot of it. The one the girls love the most is and one shooting. You guys talked about and one shooting in the past.
Tell us what it is. It might be something that somebody's talked about. It might be something completely different. So talk to us.
This one's green light shooting from over there. All right. Kelsey Plume's got a really cool one that she does where she makes it to round 8, which means she's got to make 8 consecutive 3-pointers from each of the 5 spots, and she does it in under 8 minutes. That's pretty crazy. Yeah. I cannot do that.
She's all right.
She's okay. So we don't use her records. We created our own. So for ours, what we do is in round 1, you get 1 minute on the clock, and you got to make 1 in a row at each of the 5, you know, corner, wing, top, wing, corner. You got to make each one from the 3-point. You just got to make 1 in a row. You're going to have 2 rebounders that are also passers there for you. Once you've made all 5 of those, all right, 1 at each spot, you're going to start back over at your corner. All right. Now you're going to make 2 in a row from the corner. And then if you do that, you're going to move over to 2 in a row from the wing, and then 2 in a row. But you got to make 2 in a row before you can move on. But as soon as you make your round, you get another minute to go into the next round.
So then, basically,
it's just we put a buzzer in at a minute and a buzzer in at the 2 minute, and if they haven't done with the round, they're out. Yep. And so we got 6 hoops at our place, so we'll go six girls going at this simultaneously. It's just a lot of fun, and we'll go round 1 is 1 in a row, round 2 is 2 in a row, round 3 is 3 in a row, and then instead of going like they do over at Greenlight for University of Arkansas, we just go 4th round. That's the grandmaster round. We've only had 2 girls ever get to this round, but in the 5 minutes that it takes to get there. But in that one, they've got to make 5 in a row, but you have to move to the next spot each time. So you got to make the corner shot, make the wing, go to the top. If you miss the top, you got to go back to the original corner and then go corner, wing, top, wing, corner. And you got to make each of those consecutively. It is a lot of baskets. Our girl, I mean, truthfully, they almost get like pitching elbow, like a pitcher over there, because they shoot so much in that 5 minutes. They're always gassed at the end. Charlie Pryor's got the school record in that one over there. She got that sucker done in like 4 minutes and 28 seconds. That, I mean, it was just, our girls went nuts when she made it. And what I love about that green light shooting, and as you're reading as a coach, especially if you're younger, it doesn't make sense, especially if you're like a defensive coach, like I thought I was, all right? But like he says, Mike Neighbors always says, you got to protect your shooters. I was like, I don't know what you got. If they can't play defense, then they don't need to be on the court. Well, yeah. Guess what? You know, like you
still
you
need to put
score.
The ball in the basket.
Yep. You got to put it in the hoop, right? Again, I go back to Carmelo. I don't like Carmelo at all, but he makes baskets.
Yep.
Right. And so like, how do you make it so that way you got a gal that maybe is not quite as good at defense or maybe is not quite as good at dribbling, but she's a great shooter. How do you figure out a way to make sure she's getting on the court and build the confidence in herself and the girls on your team believing that she can get it done? Well, it's drills like that. When the other girls get beat out, so they're done, they miss their buzzer. Well, now everyone's just cheering on Charlie. Or Nicole Hafer used to just go rounds with her, and Addison Erickson the year before, just go rounds those three girls. And now my daughter's trying to catch up the charge, just can't quite get there. But it's drills like that where you get to build that team atmosphere, and I think that pays off big dividends. And then I'm looking at this practice plan. My next one up is ping pong, and I said right over here, the defense had to play 2-1-2, or they could play man-to-man, or they could run 1-3-1, but they got to mix. So we played that for 8 minutes, and I put a little list over there that was a tiered team. So I wasn't doing my four best versus my next four versus my next four. It was all mixed.
Yeah.
Then we do one called 3-on-3 closeouts, where you, because truthfully, like as we got better as a team, we realized you're trying to take away the layups, which is going to force 3-pointers, which opens up a new deal. Like you got to become great at closeouts, and we're still not great at it, but we work at it. And then my next year was another ping pong. Then we came back with free throw transition. So free throw transition is just a little mini game, right? So you start with a free throw, all right? And whoever's shooting has got to get back onto defense. And then you're just going to play until somebody makes an actual basket.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the free throw counts for points. That's great. But you're going to keep playing a live game until a basket happens. And then whoever makes the basket, you're shooting free throws next. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's just a decent one over there that we tend to see. And then a lot of the ones that you see over there, like when you have like the multiple teams going, or I'm sorry, the, you know, white versus gold and white versus gold, where it's like continuous 3-on-3, we play ours backwards. We play our back. Like most people start on defense in a perfect setup, and they have a team come at them. And if you got a perfect setup and the team's coming towards you, and then you can get the rebound, and then you get to go, we go backwards. So like, if gold's playing defense right now and white's coming at them and white shoots a shot, my next three gold girls back behind, they're coming in. And so if gold gets a stop and they get a rebound, they are outletting to three girls that are coming, and that white team that just shot, they got to get back in on defense. So for us, it's about getting back on defense. Like we'll give offensive advantage right over here because we got to get great at defense. If we do not get great at transition defense, Elkhorn Exira is going to kill us. And that's how we have to live over here. Then we go play against Coon Rapids, it plays 2-3 zone, and figure out a way to keep every single game in the 40s, which I cannot figure out how they do. And it's just a different ball game. And I'm looking at my practice schedule, and the next two are ping pong. When I say we play ping pong, that is what we do, is make it, take it, head to the other side. You as the coach are going to put, you get to choose what kids are going with what. Like I might say, hey, over here, number 24 over here, you know, Nicole, you're worth double. Anything she scores is worth double. Okay, well, that's going to change the focus for the defense. That's going to force them to learn how to stop a good scorer, right? But they can't just give up points or they don't get to go play afterwards. And it also forces your team that's on offense to figure out ways to get her the ball when the other team is already hyper-focused on it. Mm-hmm. So just little games like that right over there. We just play a whole bunch of those little small-sided games, I guess. We've got a couple that we play against 2-3 zone where we just play one half of it and just play this little triangle game in between it where you can't dribble. And the only time you can dribble is if you're going to go get a layup afterwards. And I think that's kind of been a big one. So we start passing the ball against the 2-3 instead of just trying to dribble drive, which is tough because we're kind of a dribble drive offense, and that makes it tough against the 2-3. So just forcing those girls to pass the ball more, that's been a good one for us.
Yep. Coach, great stuff here tonight. Just a wealth of information, a lot of really, really good things here. You know, if folks want to know more about you, they want to know more about your program, if they want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
I suppose anybody can email me up the school account over there. That's RCOENEN at woodbine.k12.ia.us. And if there's, you know, sheets or anything like that that you'd like to see how we keep things organized, you know, I truly believe having great managers is the key to everything, and having, you know, coaches that can help you get those things done. But managers make everything go, because they got to get the water bottles where they need, because I don't give them water breaks.
Yep.
Right. Like, we're not going to go spend 8 minutes getting a water break. So having great managers, but then you have to have the setup so that way they can go own what's going on. I think a big thing's been helping us is we play Tiger Bingo during games, because once you get decent as a team, like, and you're playing against a team that's not very good and it's supposed to be a 50 or a 60 point blowout, like, how do you keep your kids motivated? Well, we got a little Tiger Bingo game that we play for every single game, and we tier it by, you know, bottom tier, middle tier, high tier. And then that keeps, because girls know they get ice cream if we get that bingo, right? Or in double bingo, we don't even know what's going to happen if a double bingo happens. So those are good things. If you hit me up on Twitter, I'm at Coach Kanen, again, C-O-E-N-E-N. I guess my phone number is 712-592-0732. If you have questions or call, I'm an open book over here. I don't hide anything, because all the information I've got has been from other people. And I really support, I really share, appreciate the support other coaches have given me. And I feel like there's other people out there that are just like me, that have struggling teams. They're trying to figure out a way to take it to the next level. And, I've just been blessed to have some really good kids coming through lately.
Yep. Coach, it's been a terrific night here. Just a lot of, like I said, a lot of really, really good stuff. I hope you've enjoyed your time on a pen and a napkin.
This has been a blast. You should do this every week with other coaches.
I mean, I've been doing that for about, not a bad idea, I guess. I could probably fit it in my schedule here a little bit.
You could make it a podcast.
Yeah, you know, yeah, just not a one-off thing. So, no, I appreciate it. It's been a great night here. Coach, if you hold the line here just a second, I got to do a couple things to sign off again. Ryan Kanen, head girls basketball coach at Woodbine High School here in Western Iowa. Want to thank him. Want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review this. Give it 5 stars. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out apenandanapkin.com. A lot of really, really good stuff out there for coaches. Just put up some stuff from the USA Basketball Academy that I went to a couple of weeks ago in Kansas City. So go check that out. Buy yourself a copy of Kings of Their Court. It's a really, really good book. I think folks will enjoy it. All sorts of different things that we've got going on here at a pen and a napkin. So again, episode 249. I want to thank Coach Kanen for his time tonight. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.